Well, welcome, Indra and Jack, and let me have both of you take turns here to introduce yourself, tell a little about who you are, and what your role is in our main topic today, which is Dwayne Lauder, an artist. So let's start with you, Indra.
Sure. Okay. Hi. Well, my name is Indra Lattis, and I'm the director of exhibitions at the Richmond Center for Visual Arts, which is seated in the College of Fine Arts at Western Michigan University. And we just concluded the run of this beautiful exhibition of paintings, primarily by Dwayne Lauder, as well as some photographs of his life and work, and also some objects, some sculptures. And we are thrilled to accept the gift of 40 paintings by Dwayne Lauder from Jack. And I think we'll get into some of the details of how that saga unfolded. So I was so happy that we were able to host the exhibition and now find a permanent home for works that are by a beloved professor from Western and someone who is a beloved artist in Kalamazoo.
And what about you, Jack? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your connection to Dwayne Lauder.
I joined the faculty in 1966, same year Dwayne did. It was the largest hire in the history of the university. The school was about 16,000 at the time, and it had only been a university for 8 years, so all the curriculums basically were set up for education. And so we were given the charge to make it a university, and the art department at the time had 10 faculty, and in that year, they hired 10 more faculty, which is unbelievable. And I was able to create the photography program. At that time, Western was rapidly expanding onto East Campus. And so they were buying all of the houses west of Sangren Hall. And the art department had 20 of these houses to be used for student studio, undergrad, grad, and faculty studio space. And that's how I really got to know Dwayne, because he and I shared one of those houses. And as a result, we just had wonderful conversations, and I got to know him quite well. That's kind of the general background of how I got to know the man.
There was something interesting that I was reading the catalog that the two of you have put together for the art show of Lauder's work, and there was something that caught my attention that he said he didn't have or want friends because they are, quote-unquote, obligations, yet you were pretty close to being one.
Yes, I think it was the aversion to the word, and I don't know where that came from. He had idiosyncrasies. Yes, we were friends. I would consider him a friend. I don't know what his aversion to that word meant, but it did come up in conversation, and I felt it was really rather strange. It's like, oh, I'm an acquaintance. I'm not a friend. But that was Dwayne. You know, yeah. He had his idiosyncrasies. And I think it was just because he liked a private life.
It's an artist's prerogative, isn't it? Don't you think?
Absolutely.
It's interesting, too, your last meeting with him, which I guess you didn't really know was going to be your last meeting with him, or maybe I'm skipping too far ahead, but when he left
that's correct.
Western and purchased a farm in Virginia, you went out to see him. I think that was in 2012, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And you kind of had a fight for that right to go see him.
That's true, but that was Dwayne, and of course it was a absolutely fabulous visit. But he and his health was obviously failing at that time. I had made I think two other visits over the years to his farm in Virginia, and you know he retired or left the university in 1982. So we maintained our contact through mail and then eventually email. And I knew that, you know, he had recent surgery. He was going to need some more surgery. And as a result, I didn't really quite know what was going on because he was very private. He didn't share his issues, so to speak. John Link, who wrote about his art, is also a friend of Duane's, acquaintance. And we both lost contact with him in his last year. He was no longer responding to, you know, our emails. So we were wondering what was going on. And of course, then subsequently, we found out about his death. He did die in his bed, which is comforting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all it on that part.
Indra, you had written something in the catalog, too, about Lauder's urge to destroy his work. I found that interesting as well. And he had something of an aversion of putting some kind of value on it, of pricing it as if that was a kind of judgment on it. I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure, sure. Well, that's a storied part of Mr. Lauder's reputation. Many artists across centuries have destroyed their own works as part of maybe a self-editing process. And Mr. Lauder was known, Jack has firsthand accounts, of course, but he was known to toss not just one work, but several works at a time into the dumpster. And one special thing of note with his in regards to his paintings is that the stretchers themselves are really works of art. He was a very skilled woodworker, also a stained glass maker, a sculptor, as I mentioned previously. And the backs of his canvases, I mean, the way these stretchers were made are incredible. I mean, and some of these canvases are very, very large. So that there's value just in the raw materials. In the exhibition, we actually showed one of the backs of the canvases. The front actually had some damage to one of the paintings, and we showed just the back so that our students could see how these are crafted, because they're really incredible objects just unto themselves, just as woodworking materials, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting. Mr. Lauder is, you know, his work is extremely high quality, but he didn't sell a lot to, you know, to collectors in New York City, say, or, you know, he's in some major museum collections across the United States and has had exhibitions across the United States, but he wasn't interested in playing the art world game. I mean, he had a lot of collectors here in Kalamazoo, and now Western is able to have the largest depository of his paintings, but he wasn't interested in that, in marketing himself, in you know, in creating that kind of persona that one needs. Well, that he loved teaching, and he was incredibly, incredibly devoted to his students. And the new student center that Western is building will house, I think, approximately 8 canvases. And some of these canvases, like I mentioned, are huge. They're 10 feet, 12 feet high, 8 feet wide. These are not small paintings. So those will be in the student center, and which will be open to the public. And it seems like a very appropriate place in that sense, because we do know that he loved his students and had great relationships with them and was really an advocate for students.
Can both of you, or either of you, since we're on radio here, can you paint a picture for us? Describe his work. What is his work like? We keep talking about paintings, but as you just mentioned, Indra, he was also a sculptor. He had artwork in different formats. How would you describe his work?
When I was there in 12, there was a fabulous painting in progress in his studio, and it contained a wonderful self-portrait, but it disappeared with all of the work that came back. So that might be one of the items that he decided he didn't like and he just disposed of. And I will say that all of the works that were up in his attic were all works he considered to be successful, and he was his own biggest critic. And so if he kept it, he thought it worked, and he thought it was good. And I think that's rewarding to know that, that, you know, he felt that this was some of his best work. And it was. He also lamented at that time that he was a hard-edged painter. And if you look at his work, the control, the brush control, is absolutely fantastic. How he made these curves and these shapes with these perfect lines of perfect width. And every mark on a painting was intended, and it was apparent that it was intended. His compositions are just fantastic. And his understanding and appreciation of color was also just fabulous. And back in the 60s when we were teaching, when I met Duane, we were both teaching basic foundation classes, and we worked together on a syllabus, and we did a bunch of study assignments for our students that had to do with color. And it's apparent that in some of his early work, it was his paintings were all about color study. So he was very, very sensitive to a palette.
What would you say about subject matter that he chose?
That's a good mystery. Because in that show, in that exhibition, you would think it was a group show. His ideas changed all the time. His imagery did not necessarily follow a pattern. It varied with the concept, whatever his idea was. Maybe it might be a piece, you know, about space, or another piece might be about color, or another piece might be about visual relationships, or another piece might be about textures. So it varied, it changed, and that's part of what the richness of this whole collection is, that there's 40 paintings that really kind of represent his mastery of the media. And he was a master, no question.
What about your perspective, Indra? What do you see when you look at his work?
Sure. Well, I see an incredibly sophisticated artist who was proficient, as Jack said. And I mean, we have strong examples of narrative and representational work. He has a whole sort of series of symbols or an iconography that is almost like an alphabet that, you know, sort of reappears throughout sections of his work. And these include everything from a dog to a duck to a house to references to the large, you know, to an open sky and to sort of the ridge of the earth on the horizon. And then, you know, we range to total abstractions that are just, as Jack said, you know, Mr. Lauder as a painter, I mean, his study of color and form and the way color forces form to speak and how form, you know, demands that color sometimes, you know, sort of scream at us and sometimes whisper, just sort of, I don't want to say flowed out of him, because I think he was also an artist who worked and worked and worked and worked and took a lot of inspiration also from what he read and from conversation and from many different fields of life, not just, you know, art. I think that he very well understood that art is not just about art, it's about life. There's something also, I think, deeply personal about his work, and that could be said, I suppose, for many an artist, it's perhaps a somewhat a generic comment, but he's telling a story. He's really, I mean, if he was, say, distant in his personal relationships, the way then that at least I've come to know Mr. Lauder is through his work. And there's, I think, a very clear voice, a very clear way of telling if we're willing to listen, which in this instance really just requires looking. And Jack did that a lot throughout the run of the show, and as did many others. They just came and they looked at the work. And I think that's what Mr. Lauder's work demands. And just one more comment to sort of tie that up. His work is very colorful, and some might mistake it as simply sort of happy or joyful. And I think there are absolutely passages and moments of joy in his work. But as John Link points out, there's also something in one of the essays in the catalog that we published to accompany this exhibition. There's also something, I think, brooding, and sometimes even, you know, a little. Quite serious, actually, about his work. And so I think that complexity and sophistication is really what defined his work overall for me.
I'm a little surprised not to see more orchids gardening in his work.
Yeah.
He seemed to keep that art form rather separate. What are your thoughts on that, Jack?
Well, going back to when we had studio space back in the 60s, we had this house that had a breezeway between the house and the garage. And it started out with one or two plants, but then after about a year or two, it was just stuffed with plants. And he loved to grow things, especially a garden. He'd have like bushels and bushels and bushels of tomatoes, and he did a lot of canning. There's also another kind of strange thing about him in that when I came down in 12, he made a comment. He said, if I didn't know you were coming, I would never know who you were.
Huh.
He didn't remember faces.
Interesting.
But he remembered things. And that had a big part, I think, in his art. It was things that he remembered. And since he was a loner, he didn't really have to watch and pay attention to faces.
Right.
So tell us a little bit more about how this collection was very nearly lost. And you kind of swooped in there and saved it. We nearly lost all of his work.
That in itself is kind of a unique story. With the estate sale, up in that attic was maybe 300 running feet of paintings. And, you know, in an estate sale, you know, auctioneers going around from room to room. And, you know, I think most of the people down there, they were kind of interested in his tractors and lawnmowers and, you know, practical things. So the paintings never came out of the attic. And it was only when Howard Sander was given charge by the bank estate people to clean up the place, you know, then he would try to figure out, like, what to do with this. So he realized this was really significant work, and it was a person's life work. And residue after an auction is junk, and you normally just go to the dump. In fact, they filled 6 or 7 industrial-size dumpsters of stuff from the estate. And in one of those dumpsters could have been all the paintings. But he realized that, you know, something needed to be done. He met an artist from Radford University and made mention about it. And this artist faculty member came over and recognized that it was work from a professional. And so Howard said, well, okay, I'll just send it to you. And so he got a truck and just packed it all up and sent it to Radford. Well, this was in May, and the school was closing for the academic year on Memorial Day. And, you know, Radford's like 9,000 students, a town of maybe 25, 26,000 people. So it's a small school. So they didn't have any storage space. The paintings were blocking egress doors, and the fire marshal said, you got to get rid of this stuff. So they were down to a few days, and then what do we do with it? And then that's when word trickled up into Michigan about what was going on. And since I knew Duane well and had recently been down there and photographed his studio and the grounds and all, you know, I knew this work had to be saved. So I hired a local person, had him fly down, rent a truck, and then bring the work back. So once Radford released it, the residue, I owned the residue. And so all of the work came up, and that was when I, you know, started working with Indra. How do we kind of save this? And the university was willing to accept this collection of paintings for their permanent collection. And we're really lucky to have an artist of that kind of creative stature, to have that many paintings of his work. And that's quite a coup.
Yes, it is. So then it comes into your hands, Indra. And tell us where, as years to come, not just now, how will we, the viewing public, be able to see any of this work? Or what are the plans for this collection, long-term plans?
A good portion of the 40 paintings will be on view in both the Richmond Center and the Dalton, and Dalton, which is right next door. And many, many people come to come into amidst the College of Fine Arts, you know, come to campus for a concert. So right there in the College of Fine Arts, in our lobby, we'll be installing a few in the Frostick School of Art. And like I said, in the School of Music, which is the Dalton building right next door. And also, like I said, in the Student Center. And the new Student Center, my understanding is that there will be restaurants and dining and all kinds of purpose and reasons for the average person to pop in there. Western's internal community itself is a big part of people who live and work in Kalamazoo. And so as part of the University Art Collection, it's really a big perk that, you know, working and living with actual objects of art, not reproductions, not posters, in our offices and in our day-to-day life on campus. And for all the visitors who come through Western, it's really, it's something that I think is an experience that's really important for a happy work life. So there will be various places on campus that Mr. Lauder's work will be up and up for the long term.
Thank you both for taking time to talk about and bring back into light Dwayne Lauder's work. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to be able to talk about Dwayne. He was somebody very, very special in my life as a young artist starting out. He had an influence on my own aesthetical sensibility. He touched everybody's life. Anybody who got to know him were affected by him. He was a very, very special person.